This is Conquering Columbus.
Hey, everybody. Mike here, and you're listening to the Conquering Columbus podcast. On this interview, I got the chance to talk with Matt Bojek, founder and creative director of Made by Things, an animation studio based right here in Columbus. And early on in our conversation, we spoke about how Matt got into animation and where he got his start. And the answer might surprise you.
As soon as I got back to Pittsburgh, probably the next day, they called and they offered me 2 weeks of work. And I was like, okay, I have this super cushy job right now, like government job where it's comfortable, kind of slow paced, a little too slow paced for me. But I was like, okay, what do I do here? Do I push this thing away that would just give me job security for probably the rest of my life? Or do I take 2 weeks guaranteed? And I decided to risk it. I quit my job, decided to go out there. In that 2 week time, I honestly forgot that we were even on like a 2 week like deal. I was treating it as if I was going to be there forever. Well, not maybe forever, for a long time anyway. And at the end of the 2 weeks, they call me in. They're like, all right, we want you to work here.
Later on, I asked Matt about the biggest turning points in the business. And for him, it was when he realized the value of what he had to offer.
The biggest moment for me was what I was trying to do was the busier I got, the more I would raise my prices. Pretty typical way of running a service-based business. You know, I got to a point where I was making decent money, right? When I left full-time employment, I was probably making $90,000 a year. That first year of being on my own dropped down to probably $40,000 a year. Now, keep in mind, I have a stay-at-home wife and a small child at this point. That was scary. So I was constantly just trying to like increase my rates, increase my prices a little bit by little bit, trying to offer a little bit more, trying to understand what people actually want. And I would say the biggest turning point for me was I was probably charging maybe $3,000 to $5,000 per animated video at this point. And this is probably 2016, 17, somewhere around there. And I remember talking to a company and they asked how much something would cost. And I was like, well, what's the budget? And usually whenever I ask this, people don't answer. And they said $30,000.
As we wrapped up the show, Matt talked about some advice for aspiring entrepreneurs. Learn the skill before you start your business.
I personally love the path of learning a skill and then figuring out how to build a business around it. I think a lot of people get stuck on like, hey, I want to have a business. And then you ask them what kind, and they're like, I don't know. Doesn't matter. And to me, even if you find success in that, is it really going to be fulfilling? Maybe. Money can cure a lot of things, I'm sure. But I guess what I would say is take a step back and identify the things that you really, really love. What are the things that you really want to be doing on a day-to-day basis? You can't always just build a business right away. You know, if you decide to yourself, like, hey, I want to make pizza for a living, or I want to have my own pizza shop, don't feel like you are above going to work at a pizza shop and learning that thing as much as you possibly can before you then decide, okay, now it's my time to start making a pizza shop.
I had a great time talking with Matt, and as always, we hope you get a lot of value from this interview. Thanks so much for tuning in. Let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Conquering Columbus podcast. This is your co-host, Mike. I'm flying solo today. Josh is out and about doing some work for some of his other businesses. He's a busy man, so unfortunately, once again, you're stuck with just me. But today on the show, we've got a great guest. So joining me today is Matt Bojek, and he is the founder and creative director of Made by Things, an award-winning animation studio that helps connect brands to their audience by using a combination of strategy and video content. Matt and his team have worked with some of the most recognizable brands in the world, and they're based right here in Columbus. So I'm excited to have Matt on today to talk about his story and the story of Made by Things. Welcome to Conquering Columbus, Matt.
Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in 300, so we are on episode 378. This will probably be 379. I don't know if we've ever had anybody in animation on the show. So that's a first for Conquering Columbus.
Woohoo. All yeah. right.
So one of the first places we like to start, just get a little bit of background on yourself, your story. So as far back as like, hey, have you always lived in Columbus?
No. So that's kind of a good spot to kind of start my story, because I grew up in Cleveland area. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling my mom at a young age, like, hey, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make videos. I'm going to do animation. And I'm never going to live in Ohio. Uh-huh. I'm going to move out the minute that I get a chance.
And I'm sure all of those things went over really, really well.
You know what? My mom was always really supportive, but I also don't think she fully understood whenever like a 13, 14 year old is saying these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
I honestly don't even know if I believed in it myself, but it was always sure. like kind of the goal, right? Mm-hmm. And when I got a little bit older, I was like, okay, let's put those dreams aside. Everyone in my family, you know, blue collar family, everyone works in factories. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, well, which factory do I want to work in? That's like kind of the thought that I had. Mm-hmm. And luckily my mom was sort of like, hey, I want you to go to college. I think you should. I'm like, I'm getting like C's at best, like sometimes B's. Like, what makes you think that like I'm a good fit for college? Mm-hmm. I was like, there's nothing that I would even want to go for. I'm like, the only thing that I'd like to do is draw and make videos.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, maybe that's something to look into. I'm like, I didn't know anybody that took that path. So right. It was tough.
Yeah. I want to back it up there because like, you know, you're into drawing videos, but where did that come from? How did that start?
Oh, that was 100% my brother. My older brother was always drawing. I remember going through his sketchbooks, seeing the stuff that he was doing and being so amazed by the stuff that he was doing. I was like, he's probably 5 or 6 years older than me. And I was like, okay, this is really cool. Like, this is the kind of stuff I want to do. I remember getting a digital camera when they really first came out, and me and my dad would sit there trying to figure out how it worked. I'd ride my bike around on my little BMX track in the backyard. We'd take photos, take little videos, and then I would take them back and edit them. It got to a point where, long story here, but my brother used to ride motorcycles with his friends. They had a little group and they would kind of travel, do competitions and stuff like that, do like different stunts and stuff. Well, I would have everybody recording stuff and I would compile it together and I would make videos. And then we would sell those videos for like $5 or $10 a piece to just random people. This is when I was like 14, basically, at this point. So
finding a hustle.
Yeah, no, that's me. It was always me as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I've always loved to make stuff. There was I don't know. I think everybody sort of like finds their flow. And I think I found my flow state very early in life, to where I was like, all right, I literally don't want to do anything else. And I know I'm never going to change my mind, which kind of goes here and there. But right.
Okay. And now we're back to where we were at. So we're good. Your mom saying, hey, you should go to college. And this is the only thing. So pick it up from there.
Yeah. So I went to the Art Institute of Pittsburgh. This was, you know, one
gross
of the
Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm a big Browns fan.
If there's one thing Bengals and Browns fans can agree on, it's that we both don't like Pittsburgh.
But I'll tell you what, that city, it was a really special city. Just
it's a great city. I'm not really going to knock it. It's right. Great. But
I was 100% the same way. I'm like, I don't want to go to Pittsburgh. And my mom's like, you need to get over that. Like, there's something else there. I was like, okay.
Right. It's just a place. The Steelers aren't the only thing they have.
Right. But of course, I go there in 2005. Steelers win a Super Bowl.
Yuck.
And I was like, okay, well, do I go to this parade? Because when am I ever going to see a Super Bowl parade?
Yeah.
But
did you wear a Browns jersey to the parade?
I don't think I did. I was too scared to do that.
Yeah, that would probably be a bold move.
Yeah.
Okay, so you go to Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And I guess at that point, right, do you have this vision for what you want to do after? Or is it more of just like, hey, look, like, I know I want to do something with art and design and video and animation, but I don't know what that is yet.
Yeah, it was kind of that. I think the dream at that point for pretty much anybody that I knew was, hey, Pixar is doing amazing things.
Yeah.
Let's learn this thing. Let's go work at Pixar. Mm-hmm. So that was the big dream right there. I don't know. I mean, going through school, I worked hard. I was probably one of the top people in the class. But I think whenever it got closer to the graduation, it became much more real that that's not going to happen. You don't just
show up and be like, hey, look, I was top of my class.
Right.
Right. Pixar is one of those places.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty big name.
Right. So I graduated at the end of 2008. And if we know anything about that period of time, nobody was getting a job in anything. So it led to me going from feeling like I was really good at this thing. I'm like, okay, I can do this. I can get into this field. I had all this confidence in the world. Graduated, crickets. Mm-hmm. I'm applying for hundreds of jobs. Nothing. So I kind of started my own business at that point where I was like, okay, nobody's going to hire me. I'm going to start my own job. It was really scary, honestly, because I was like, oh my God, I just spent tens of thousands of dollars on this education. Like, was that for nothing? Like, everyone would always say, like, going to art school is a bad idea. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to be a starving artist. Like, all of those things. And there was a moment there where I was like, they're right. It was pretty devastating for a while there. It took hundreds of job applications, sending out resumes, dozens of interviews, but nothing ever happened until, I mean, I really was close to giving up. I was applying for jobs at like Micro Center and Best Buy. So I was like, I have to work now. Right. Like, I can't do nothing. And luckily I got a job at the U.S. Department of Energy. Weird.
Surprising place.
Yeah. A weird connection back in Pittsburgh. So ended up packing all my stuff up. So after I graduated in Pittsburgh, moved back home to Cleveland and then got a job back in Pittsburgh, moved stuff again because it's just, yeah, it was fun.
What you got to do, right?
Yeah,
do. So I'm curious then, what were you doing for the U.S. Department of Energy?
So my title was a multimedia artist. So I was doing a lot of 3D illustration design and animation on research projects, mm-hmm. new scientific discovery kind of things. A lot of it was like, you know, people doing like real heavy research.
Sure.
And they needed a way to visualize these things. So I was doing a lot of that stuff. Going back a little bit, that early phase before I got a job, I was like, all right, let me start my own thing. And, you know, I was making 20 bucks here, 20 bucks there. It was nothing sustainable, really, to live off of. But I was having a lot of fun with it. So I was like, okay, that's cool. I got a real job now. I can get a car, finally. I can, you know, have an apartment. I'm like, but I still have, like, I wasn't done. Mm-hmm. Like, there was still more to explore when it came to having my own business and pushing that forward. So, you know, during that time of having my first job and even my second job, I kept on working. I don't want to say every night and weekend, mm-hmm. but it was a lot. I guess the thing is, it never felt like work. It was always just like, it was my hobby too. So I come home and, you know, when other people watch TV, I make stuff.
Yeah. So this work that you're doing on the side, right? Is it similar to stuff you do in your day-to-day work, or was there like a particular niche that you found yourself kind of being drawn towards during that process?
Yeah, it was pretty similar. Mm-hmm. I kept finding myself getting involved in a lot of different creative things. People would come to me like, hey, you do logos? I'm like, not really, but I guess I could. Do you do websites? Not really, but I guess I could. But like, animation was always my thing. Mm-hmm. And it started to get to a point where actually a lot of people were asking me to do things outside of this. And I'm like, okay, I don't even want to do these things, but I'm doing them. Mm-hmm. But you know, it was around that time of trying to like figure that out where I ended up taking a vacation to Los Angeles. My first time ever on a plane. I think I was 22, 23, somewhere around there. The first time farther west than Indiana. Real scary, real scary stuff. But when I went out there, I met up with a friend that moved out there, and he was working at a studio, and he told me to come by and get a tour of the place. I was like, oh, this is a cool idea. So on the vacation, we go there for a little tour. I don't know exactly how it happened, but it sort of turned into an interview. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just trying to look at the place. That's cool. But it turned into, I'm sitting at the conference table, doors closed, mm-hmm. three other people in the room, and they're asking questions like, so you want to work here? And I'm like, I never thought about this. Like, this would be a dream come true. I just need to say the word yes right now. Mm-hmm. But I was like, there's no way. Like, I had my girlfriend, I guess she was probably my fiance at this point, now my wife. But I was like, you know, she's not going to go for this. She's just started school, like nursing school. She's not going to want to pick up and leave. Like, it just, I was finding all the reasons to say no. Mm-hmm. And whenever, you know, it's kind of this thing we were sort of laughing about a little bit when we were there. But near the end of our trip, it started becoming more real. I'm like, I think they're going to ask me. Like, I need to know what I'm going to say. And my wife was like, you got to take it. You got to do this. Like, there's really no question. She's like, I want to come here. Like,
right. LA seems nice.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, again, nothing against Pittsburgh or Cleveland or Columbus. But yeah, I had this opportunity. I'm like, this is it. This is a big checkbox that's, you know, mm-hmm. been part of my life for a long time. So as soon as I got back to Pittsburgh, probably the next day they called and they offered me 2 weeks of work. And I was like, okay, I have this super cushy job right now, like government job where it's comfortable, kind of slow paced, a little too slow paced for me. But I was like, okay, what do I do here? Do I push this thing away that would just give me job security for probably the rest of my life? Or do I take 2 weeks guaranteed? And I decided to risk it. I quit my job, decided to go out there. In that 2 week time, I honestly forgot that we were even on like a 2 week like deal. I was treating it as if I was going to be there forever. Well, not maybe forever, for a long time anyway. And at the end of the 2 weeks, they called me in. They're like, all right, we want you to work here. So while I was there, worked on a lot of music videos, independent movies, mm-hmm. a lot of commercials. I was doing a lot of animation work, a lot of the stuff that I really, really love to do. So there was this kind of perfect alignment that happened when I was there. But I guess I was probably there for almost 3 years. Mm-hmm. Around then, my wife got pregnant. Mm-hmm. And we're like, all right, do we want to raise a kid here? Mm-hmm. Or is it time to go somewhere else? In that time, I'm like, okay, it's time to go. But where? Where are we going to go? So I was like, okay. First thing is, we wanted to be a little bit closer to family in Cleveland. So we're like, all right, somewhere on this side of the Mississippi. That was literally the only restriction that I put on things. So we were looking at Chicago. We were looking at New York. We were looking at Raleigh, mm-hmm. a couple other cities. And I was also looking at Columbus. I entertained the idea for just a moment. I was like, you know what? No, there's nothing. There's no market
right.
in Columbus. I told my mom I was leaving Ohio, never coming back. She cried, but,
sure.
But I started talking to a few people that were here and I was like, you know what? There's something happening here. This is not the Ohio that I grew up in. This is a different Ohio here. So yeah, made the decision like, all right, it's time to go. Mm-hmm. This is where we're going to go. Showed my wife everything, gave her the little presentation of like, this is why we should go here. And she's like, all right, you think this is best? Let's go.
Yeah. Is it at this point that, you know, are you looking for a job in Columbus or are you saying, hey, I know this is the time for me to kind of break off and do my own thing?
Well, I knew I was ready. Again, this whole time I've been working nights and weekends. Like mm-hmm. even when I was working out there, I'd be working till 7, 8 o'clock at night sometimes, come back, still keep working on my own stuff. I knew that like, okay, I want to start a business. Like officially, like I wanted to do it full time. Could I do it in Los Angeles? Probably, but it would have been much more difficult to do. So that idea kind of scared me a little bit where I'm like, if there was like a smaller market, a place where it's a bit more affordable, a place where I could make mistakes, then that would be the place for me. Yeah. So we landed on Columbus, came here. I did end up taking a couple like longer term contracts at a company that I was at. They're like, after like 9 month contract, they're like, great, we want you to work here full time. And it was like such a nice thing. And I was like, I can't.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like, that's not what I'm doing here. I'm about to take a risk and maybe I'm saying something stupid, but I can't do it. So at that point, I went off on my own. And that was probably the scariest month of my life.
Yeah. I suppose the question I have is like, what drew you to that decision, right? Was it the independence, right? Because it sounds like, hey, I'm already doing some of the things I want to do on the side, right? Might be nice to have. So like, I suppose like what made you want to take that risk?
So I guess for that answer, we kind of have to go back a little bit farther. When I was in high school, mm-hmm. middle school, I was selling burned CDs to people. I would give them a list of the music that I had on Napster and basically like, all right, you choose from here, $1 mm-hmm. per song. If I have mm-hmm. to download, it's $1.50. I would sell Magic the Gathering cards. I've always loved selling things. I loved shoveling driveways, like making money, like any way that I possibly could. There's some kind of, maybe it's not the healthiest thing all the time, but there's some kind of validation when someone parts ways with their money. There's no greater compliment than when somebody takes money out of their pocket and gives it to you mm-hmm. in exchange for something that you either have or do. I've always been fascinated by this idea for as long as I can remember. I don't think that there was ever any other way, honestly. Like, I think that's just kind of how it was going to be. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, there's the skill set that I have, but I guess I just knew that at some point or another, that skill set becomes what I'm going to do. And now there's obviously nothing wrong with, you know, working full time at places. But for me, I wanted more. I wanted more of a challenge. Yes, I wanted to make more money. I wanted to understand the business side more. I wanted to, I don't know, I guess I just wanted to understand every single part about it.
Hey everybody, Mike here. We're going to take a quick break to talk about one of our sponsors, One Columbus, and we are very excited to partner with One Columbus. They really, really share the same vision as us here at the Conquering Columbus podcast, which is really building up the Columbus region to be one of the most prosperous regions in the United States. And One Columbus serves as the business location resource for companies across Central Ohio and around the world as those companies grow, innovate, and compete within the global economy. And they help us lead a regional growth strategy that develops and attracts the world's most competitive companies, grows a highly adaptive workforce, and prepares our communities for the future, inspiring innovation across the board. Their mission really is just ensuring the Columbus region is a vibrant place to build businesses and careers. So again, we really appreciate all of their support. You want to learn more about them, go check out their website, columbusregion.com. That's columbusregion.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be right back into the episode.
Yeah. And so as you kind of take that on, right? Obviously, one of the first things is getting clients. You already probably had some from you know, your nights and weekends work. But how do you go about it? Because you said that first month. So like mm-hmm. that first month, how do you go about really like, okay, I got to start getting a lot more work coming through.
Right.
What does that process look like?
So yeah, the first month was, okay, do I have enough clients? Did I have enough savings? Did I plan this right? And the first project that I get was probably like a 2-week project and I made $200. And I was like, okay, like that's not what we're doing here.
Right.
But the phone wasn't ringing. I realized very quickly that I probably did make a mistake, but there's no going back. There's only going forward. So what are you going to do? And the first thing that I decided was, okay, I'm brand new to this city. Like nobody's going to find me unless I go out there. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like made a little bit of a, I guess, promise with myself, like, okay, you need to try to have one meeting a week, maybe one meeting a month with just somebody in the industry. Like, not about like pitching them your business, but I needed to grow the network because it was zero, like when I came here. So I remember having probably 26 meetings over the course of 2 or 3 months, maybe. And then I was like, okay, there's some really amazing people here. There's something special going on here. If anything, I definitely convinced myself like this was the place where I needed to be. But at the same time, like I still need to grow the network while kind of taking on smaller projects and just trying to take on as many projects as I possibly could. Mm-hmm. And, you know, reading books as well, and just trying to learn as much as I possibly could. Like I knew day one that I didn't know nearly as much as I needed to know, but I also knew that I wasn't going to learn it unless I just took that leap.
Yeah. Was there any key turning points in that? When did you think, well, okay, hey, maybe this wasn't a mistake. This might work.
Right. You know, the biggest moment for me was what I was trying to do was the busier I got, the more I would raise my prices, right? Pretty typical way of running a service-based business. You know, I got to a point where I was making decent money, right? When I left full-time employment, I was probably making $90,000 a year. That first year of being on my own dropped down to probably $40,000 a year. Now, keep in mind, I have a stay-at-home wife and a small child at this point. That was scary, right? Yeah. So I was constantly just trying to like increase my rates, increase my prices a little bit by little bit, trying to offer a little bit more, trying to understand what people actually want. And I would say the biggest turning point for me was I was probably charging maybe $3,000 to $5,000 per animated video at this point. And this is probably 2016, 17, sure, somewhere around there. And I remember talking to a company and they asked how much something would cost. And I was like, well, what's the budget? And usually whenever I ask this, people don't answer.
Sure.
And they said $30,000. Uh-huh. And I was like, okay.
So, I might be able to work with that.
Yeah. And that's 100% what I said. I'm like, well, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But in my head, I was like, I can't believe this. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like 6 times more than what I would charge for this. Like if I had to quote it myself. So to me, this was this big turning point because I'm like, all right, now I'm starting to figure out what the value is of what we're doing. So most of my life, it's I'm doing this stuff because I enjoy it. And I feel like I'm pulling a fast one over on everybody because I'm able to do what I love to do. Mm-hmm. And they're paying me to do it.
Right.
Like it was the weirdest thing, right? But it was around this point where I was like, okay, there is actual value to what we're doing here. Like we can still have fun and create value for other people. So for me at that point, I was like, okay, now I'm starting to see a path of how I can actually grow a company, how I can hire people. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what I did at that point was like, okay, let's hire an intern at first. Let's hire contractors on a short-term basis until I got to a point where I was like, I'm keeping these people busy almost full time. I need to hire somebody. It's time.
Yeah.
So I hired my first employee in 2019. I think it's 2019. From there, it was really about growing, being able to make stuff that we were absolutely proud of, while at the same time delivering the kind of stuff that really wows people, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So as that's kind of changed, right? You're bringing in people, your role changes a lot.
Yes, it has.
Right. What I'm curious about is like, how are you still like day to day? Like I'm really in the video portion of this, or are you starting to get more of the, like now I'm more focused on the business? And how has that changed the way you think and feel about the business?
Yes, everything about my role has changed. And that was one of the things where I was relatively prepared for, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people talk about that now of like at a certain point, you kind of have to transition from being the doer to kind of the manager of those things. I knew a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people that had a lot of resentment because that decision was forced upon them. And I knew I didn't want that for me. So in my head, I was like, okay, let's take this slow. At any point I can go back, mm-hmm. but I want to take this one step at a time and see if I can figure out how to do this in a way that's comfortable, that I feel good about, a way that's fulfilling to me. So as of right now, I have a team of probably 9 full-time. Mm-hmm. And yes, like my role, you know, I kind of play role of creative director. So I'm watching everything that's going on, speaking to clients on a regular basis, making sure that we are in alignment with that you asked for this. This is what we're giving you. But also at the same time, I'm looking at the team, making sure the team is happy, making sure they're fulfilled. And to me, that's one of the surprising things that I never really expected to enjoy. I don't know. It's sort of like me as in a role of like a mentor or teacher. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, this is, I really enjoy this. Going back a little bit, the time that I spent in Los Angeles making stuff, you know, I made stuff for some of the biggest brands in the world, well-known musicians, movies, whatever. Like I did those things. I got to a point where I was like, I don't feel like I have anything left to prove. Mm-hmm. I didn't care what anyone thought about that. So I was like, I don't need to go in and animate things. I don't need to illustrate things. I don't need to be the one that does this. But if I'm the one helping other people be able to do these things, I was still finding the exact same, maybe even more fulfillment doing those things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a good chunk of my role. So business development, having, continuing to build the network that I started creating many years ago, which now expands much farther than Columbus, but doing that, marketing, and human resources, right? Accounting. My wife helps a bit with accounting these days, but still, you know, knowing the numbers.
Yeah. And so what do you think is the biggest challenge then? Because it sounds like, I mean, from what I'm hearing, sorry, I'm hearing a lot of like, hey, I always knew I was going to do this. And yeah, it was tough for a time, but now I'm enjoying what I'm doing, I transitioned. Well, what have been the challenges of entrepreneurship that have kind of really hit you?
That's a great question. I think there's a lot. All the things that you think are like easy to do end up becoming much more complex. So the idea of hiring somebody by itself, I was like, okay, this shouldn't be too hard, right? Mm-hmm. But I, you know, started asking some people and I was like, all right, well, how do you go about doing this? And then like, nobody was able to explain this to me in an easy way. Mm-hmm. So like, okay, this is really, really complicated, right? Especially whenever COVID happened, we started hiring people outside of Ohio.
Yeah.
It's still just as complicated, but I've become much more confident of like, oh, okay, now we can figure this stuff out. It was a big challenge navigating some of those things, navigating things like, okay, well, I want employees to have 401k, mm-hmm. health insurance benefits, like navigating all those things. That's a point right there where you can see like, a lot of people don't want to cross that line. Especially right now, a lot of people are more interested in being solopreneurs because they don't want to deal with all of that. It was just one of those things where I felt like I had to do it, whether mm-hmm. I wanted to or not. So the challenge there was being okay with making some pretty big mistakes at times, but knowing that you're doing this for your future.
Yeah, yeah. That makes a ton of sense. And by the way, before I forget, Who? You ever read Who?
No.
Good hiring process book.
Yeah.
I think anybody can pick something up from that book, but really good. It's like a whole process. Who? I'll send you the link. So as we think about kind of the team today, what you said, you have 9 folks on the team today. Like, what are the big initiatives you're working on right now that you're excited about? What's going on at Made by Things?
Yeah, another good question. I think a part of this is we've sort of always been evolving,
right?
The kind of work that we do, like, yes, we want to create high value work for people, but we also want to make sure that we are fulfilled as artists, right? It's this really weird thing that I don't expect everyone to understand, but that's just kind of how the world of creativity sort of works, is that if you're not fulfilled, if you don't feel creative, then you're not going to be able to do your best work. Mm-hmm. It's sort of this balance, right? A big thing for us going forward is, I guess it has been for a bit now, it's telling the best stories that we possibly can. It's doing things beyond advertising and traditional marketing, right? It's looking at things like Lego Movie, Barbie, Transformers, like all those things, but they're entertaining. So for me and the rest of the team, it's like, hey, wait a minute. We might be able to create really entertaining content, but still be able to fulfill that value for mm-hmm. brands. So I think a big part for us is actually getting more into the entertainment side of things as opposed to the traditional advertising area. But yeah.
Do you think a lot of this content is going to be moving to TikTok or whatever, you know, whatever is, I just said the TikTok, so I feel like a 70-year-old man.
That's good.
But it's going to move to the TikToks of the world is kind of where I was going with that. Like that, just whatever that platform is next, right? Or do you think that that'll stabilize a little bit?
So here's the thing. Everyone right now basically says like, okay, humans have the attention span of a fly, right? 6 seconds. And I don't necessarily believe that because people are going to movie theaters and they're watching Avatar. That's like 3.5 hours long. Mm-hmm. Not everybody, but people are doing it. Again, in general, movies are 90 minutes and people are going to theaters constantly watching these things. It's because they're entertained. So really what it comes down to is it's not about trying to make the shortest piece of content you can. It's about making something that's good, making something that's entertaining. Again, nobody's going to go to the theater and watch a 90-minute ad for something unless it's really, really good, which I'm totally interested in exploring. But things like TikTok, I think it's great, right? Like I definitely don't hate on anything that I see there. What I love about stuff like that is people are able to create some of their own content and even test stuff at like a, I don't know, like they can test maybe more budget-friendly content on something like that where it's like, hey, it doesn't matter if you have the most expensive microphone. It doesn't matter if you have top of the line cameras. If you can tell a story on your phone, that's just as amazing as being able to tell a story with all the equipment. Now, I'm obviously biased towards the professional side of things, but I don't know. I don't think that's necessarily where the future is. I think that's where things are right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. So what about the future of Made by Things? Do you want to continue to grow this thing? Do you want to continue to build up? Or are you like, hey, I really like the team we got. I want to kind of just continue doing what we're doing. Do you see more scale in the future?
That's a good question because it changes on a daily basis, honestly. Sure. There was a part of me that said five people, five and I'm done. And I barely had five people for like a week before I was on to the person number six. Yeah, I started developing like, what's the dream team look like exactly? And then I realized at that point, I'm like, no, I need a project manager. I need another artist. I need somebody that can do this. So it escalates very quickly. But I would say yes, we'll probably grow a little bit more. So yeah, if we're 8 or 9 full-time right now, going up to 15, 20 people, I think I'd be happy there. I think more so than that, it's really about pushing the kind of stuff that we do as a team forward. We want to work on those bigger brands, the team does especially. And we want to just tell really unique and honest stories, honestly.
Yeah. And is it a struggle at all being in Central Ohio, which I would imagine is not the typical locale for most animation studios, especially with the clientele you're working with?
That's a great question too, because when I was in Los Angeles, I started noticing that it was very expensive to work with anybody there. Mm-hmm. Now, not to say that like, hey, come to the Midwest, we're way cheaper. Like that's not, that can't be the message. But I recognize that like, hey, they don't need these studios of like 100, 200,000 people. They can get the same work done with a small team of, let's say, 5 or 10. Like that's this sort of shift that's been happening and it's still kind of ongoing. Mm-hmm. Not at any point since I got here did I feel like we were at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because I am a Browns fan.
Sure.
I love the underdog story. So I've always loved that. I've always embraced that. You know, we still work with people all over the place. We work with people in San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York. Mm-hmm. And I think that if anyone's surprised, it's usually them. They'll call and be like, hey, where are you at? Columbus, Ohio. Really?
Yeah.
I'm like,
how's that?
They're generally surprised, but then, I don't know, I think they get it at a certain point.
Sure.
Especially when I show up and I'm like, I'm wearing my backwards hat. Mm-hmm. I'm wearing my t-shirt. Like, this is me. You're getting me, the honest me. You'll work with me. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't think I ever have to literally convince anybody of like, Columbus is amazing. Like, right. I'm not really interested in that either. But, you know, there's other studios in this town too. I think creatively, Columbus is on the rise right now. Mm-hmm. So I've been here now for maybe 8 or 9 years, somewhere around there. And I feel like I got here when the stock was low.
Yeah.
And I'm like, great.
Right. Yeah, keep going. All ships rise with the tide, right?
Right.
Well, Matt, I think, you know, that's a good place to kind of head towards some of our last questions of the show, but it's been great talking to you so far. So our first one is centered around our listeners. Do you have any advice for them? Many of them are entrepreneurial minded. They're thinking about maybe doing something like this, or, you know, they're interested in what other entrepreneurs are doing. So any advice for them out there?
I do. This might be a little contradictory to what many of the listeners may have heard in the past. Mm-hmm. I personally love the path of learning a skill and then figuring out how to build a business around it. I think a lot of people get stuck on like, hey, I want to have a business. And then you ask them what kind, and they're like, I don't know. Doesn't matter. And to me, that even if you find success in that, is it really going to be fulfilling? Maybe. Money can cure a lot of things, I'm sure. But I guess what I would say is take a step back and identify the things that you really, really love. What are the things that you really want to be doing on a day-to-day basis? You can't always just build a business right away. You know, if you decide to yourself like, hey, I want to make pizza for a living, or I want to have my own pizza shop. Don't feel like you are above going to work at a pizza shop and learning that thing as much as you possibly can before you then decide, okay, now it's my time to start making a pizza shop, right? Using that as an example, but you get the idea.
So take it on the skill first and then
build
the business.
Right.
Good advice. And so Matt, our last question of the show, it's centered around the theme here on Conquering Columbus, which is live uncomfortably. So without telling you too much about why we chose that phrase for a show about entrepreneurs and business leaders, what do you think of when you hear it? Has it applied to your life and career?
It kind of takes me back to that story that I told of getting on a plane for the first time. Mm-hmm. Almost everything that, every success that I've had in my life, I can identify the point in which I went far beyond my comfort to be able to get to that. I'm not the travel type. In the same week, I decided to conquer. Look at that. You like this?
Mm-hmm. There you go.
A lot of the fears that I had personally. Mm-hmm. My fears were needles.
Yeah.
Airplanes.
Don't like needles. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to donate blood.
Sure.
And I'm going to get on a plane.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go. So within a couple of days apart, and I couldn't help but understand or just see the path whenever I got there. And I'm like finding myself in an interview for a dream job. I'm like, This was all because I decided to face the things that I had legitimate fears of. I still have fears of these things, but I at least figured out how to do those things through the fear. So I guess what I would say, if it was another piece of advice for people, understanding the things that you are afraid of and finding a way to still do what you think you need to do beyond that fear, right? The fear is never going to go away. You don't just remove fears.
Sure.
But what you do figure out is how to operate with that fear still there.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
Right on. Well, Matt, again, thanks so much for joining us, coming on the show to talk about yourself, Made by Things.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Conquerors, thanks so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed that interview, or if you want to learn, actually, before we go off, if you want to learn more about Made by Things, you can go to
madebythings.com.
Nice and simple. But again, thanks so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed that interview, you want to hear more just like it, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on whatever podcast app you are listening on. It really does help support the show, and it makes sure that you never miss an episode of Conquering Columbus. So appreciate you tuning in. We'll talk to you next week.